The following is a recording for Shauna Brown with the American Hospital Association of Chicago, Wednesday, August 21st, 2019, at 1 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Participation in this call is by express written invitation of the AHA only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids and abets such unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law. Please disconnect from the call if the AHA did not expressly invite your participation. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would like to now turn the conference over to Shauna Brown. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining the AHA and its post-acute membership on today's members-only call. As you know, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services on July 30th issued its fiscal year 2020 final rule for the Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment System. This rule, which takes effect October 1, addresses additional policy elements of the new SNF PPS payment model known as the Patient-Driven Payment Model, which CMS finalized last year. AHA has shared a regulatory advisory with the field on yesterday to highlight the details of the redesigned SNF PPS payment model, which is being implemented in fiscal year 2020 and bringing transformational change to the field. You should have all received a copy of this regulatory advisory and the slide presentation for today's call, along with the reminder that was sent last evening. Rochelle Archuleta, our Director of COP Policy, and Caitlin Galluli, the Senior Associate Director of Policy, are joining me today to provide an overview of the final rule and its implications for our members. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Rochelle.
Great. Thank you, Shauna, and thank you to everyone who's on the call. As Shauna mentioned, the fiscal year 2020 shifts to a new payment model really are transformative. We really cannot overstate the magnitude of this change. And what we see in the rule this year is a fairly brief rule that makes some additional changes to help implement PDPM, but really the heavy lifting was accomplished in the fiscal year 2019 final rule, and it was last year's rulemaking where CMS took in heavy comments on the model, made some adjustments in its movement from the 2019 proposed rule to the 2019 final rule. So we really face the current regulatory cycle with much of the workload having been accomplished. We can start with the slide that begins to provide some of the final payment details. And just to provide a quick snapshot, if you compare 2020 payments to 2019 payments, CMS is projecting an increase of 2.4%. That's an $851 million increase. And the impact actually varies quite a bit from subgroup to subgroup when you look at the field. For instance, if you look at the hospital-based provider subgroup, which is, you know, relatively small presence in the field of 15,000 skilled nursing facilities, but that's AHA's focus. I want to highlight those. And what CMS is estimating is that for urban hospital-based SNFs, payments will go up by 12.4%, and rural hospital-based SNFs will experience an increase of 23.1%. This is because the payment model makes a big shift from resources in terms of the focus in the current and prior years on high therapy cases to a new focus on medically complex cases, and hospital-based providers as a proportion of all cases have a much higher presence of medically complex cases. So the model really favors them without any changes. That said, we are expecting the field as a whole to make shifts perhaps in some ways to account for this change in emphasis. It really remains to be seen how the patient population will change under the new PDPM. We know, by looking back, the a profile based on what payment criteria were in effect in 2019 and prior, and those payment criteria focused on the therapy needs of patients. Of course, not all cases were grouped into the rehab rug, but many were. And so moving forward, we'll see which of those high rehab cases, if there were their diagnoses and clinical characteristics are coded differently, if those same population, if that same population will still remain but just paid differently under this new model, or if we'll actually see a shift in certain patients becoming less prominent in the SNF setting and other new types of patients becoming more prominent. Of course, the SNF reform isn't happening in a vacuum. It's happening at the same time as there are major reforms already underway in the LTAC space in 2015. A major reform is starting for IRS on October 1, and the home health field is undergoing a major shift from high therapy to higher acuity beginning in January 1. So there's so much in play that once we start to see, or CMS starts to see, claims from 2020, there's going to be very intense scrutiny to see what the new patient population looks like and how payments play out relative to that, you know, adjusted patient population and how they're paid under PDPM. There's no phase-in for this shift because CMS thought that it was too complicated to concurrently run the RUGs and PDPM, so the RUGs will be completely phased out as of October 1. The agency is making no behavioral adjustments, so that's why they're making no behavioral adjustments in 2020, but we anticipate that in future years it's likely that they will make adjustments to make sure that 2020 payments reflect the actual cost of treating patients. So they'll probably make some retroactive adjustments later to make sure that the cost and payments for 2020 are aligned. Let's look at the next slide. And this is really just a refresher slide to remind you of the design of PDPM, as well as a look at just how much more complex the consideration of payments will be and how it's going to be a composite, a comprehensive clinical composite of the patient that determines payment. And you can see per diem rates will be based on a compilation of the patient's PT, OT, speech-language pathology, nursing, and non-therapy ancillary profile. Looking at the next slide, just want to talk about the patient assessment schedule. CMS did finalize a major change in its final rule last year, and they've made some adjustments this year. Recall that last year they removed the mandated sequence of MDS assessments. Instead, we're going to have one mandatory assessment, which is the first assessment, which will no longer be called the 5-day assessment, will now be called the initial Medicare assessment. And then moving forward during the patient's episode of care, to capture any clinical changes from the initial Medicare assessment, providers will have the option of completing an interim payment assessment. This will be should be done in alignment with, you know, changes to the plan of care, and these will result in a change to the per diem rate. As proposed, CMS also finalized a new definition of group therapy. Instead of the current group therapy, which is 2 to 6 patients performing the same or similar therapy under the supervision of a therapist or assistant, that's the new definition, as opposed to today, where group therapy only applies when you have exactly 4 patients. So basically, the new standard is more flexible. CMS made this change after observing SNF therapists in practice and making the conclusion that the therapists have the wherewithal to implement the group therapy definition with greater autonomy And so here they've adopted the rule that's in effect in the IRS setting. This change is finalized with some cautions. Mm-hmm. CMS emphasizes that they still view individual therapy as the preferred therapy that they would like to see provided in IRS, and they make that same caution, in IRS. Turning to the next slide, wanted to share where the agency landed. Because of the payment system now accounting for new clinical elements beyond therapy minutes, the use of ICD-10 by SNFs becomes more important to capture, you know, the clinical categories for patients for PT, OT, speech language pathology, as well as certain comorbidities used to classify patients into the right categories for speech language pathology and non-therapy ancillaries. So what they've laid out here is just a two-step process to explain how they will make changes to the ICD-10 codes that are mapped to the SNF PPS. For any changes that go beyond a kind of a system maintenance type of change, CMS will propose those changes through formal notice and comment rulemaking. And then anything that's more in the maintenance category will be changed through a sub-regulatory process. So that concludes my update. You can see that the payment section of this year's rule was fairly contained, and because of that, I'll wrap up and turn the call over to Caitlin.
Great. Thanks, Rochelle. So we're going to pick up on slide 8, and I'll review the finalized changes in the quality reporting program for skilled nursing facilities, as well as those for the skilled nursing facility value-based purchasing program, and then offer a little bit of color commentary on the back and forth between comments from stakeholders and CMS as they responded. So on slide 8, you can see that CMS did finalize the adoption of two new quality measures. These measures are both about transfer of health information. The health information of interest is a reconciled medication list. The first measure assesses the proportion of patients for whom the medication list was transferred to the subsequent provider if that patient is transferred to another facility. The second measure, health information to patient, assesses that same rate if the patient was discharged to the home without home health, so if that medication list was transferred to the patient, the family, the caregiver, et cetera. So this is a process measure. We're not huge fans of process measures because they're very difficult to validate. It's really a yes or no question, and so it's hard to go back and see whether that the measure is actually resulting in changes in positive changes in behavior. It is also, we call it check the box because it's very frequently topped out or everyone kind of gets to, you know, 100% performance on these measures very quickly. So we don't think that they're the most useful measures in the world. But CMS is statutorily required to meet the domains of the Impact Act with the standardized and interoperable quality measures. One of those domains is transfer of health information. It's the only domain that CMS has not yet met with the quality measures across those various settings. So now they are in full compliance. There are quality measures in all of those domains required under the Impact Act, so we kind of expected this to be finalized. It was also finalized in the long-term care hospital PPS and the inpatient rehab facility PPS, and it was proposed for home health as well. So this measure is not risk-adjusted or stratified. Process measures generally aren't. There shouldn't be any patient-level factors that would influence performance on this measure. It will involve the addition of two items to the MDS, one item asking, did you transfer that medication list, yes or no, and then an additional item asking what the route of transmission was. So did you give a paper copy? Did you send it through the EHR? Did you verbally state what the medications were? And we questioned in our comments really what the usefulness of that information was other than just fact-finding, if there was any way CMS was actually going to use that information, because that, too, would be very challenging to validate. So because these measures were finalized, data submission will be required starting with October 1st, 2020, discharges. So upon that that final assessment, then that's the question you'll have to answer, yes or no, and how did you transfer that information. A few other quality reporting updates on the following slide. CMS did finalize its update to the discharge to community measure to exclude baseline nursing facility patients. So those are patients who were admitted to a SNF that had another SNF stay with no intervening community discharge between their stay and our hospitalization. So in other words, patients who are coming to a SNF from a nursing facility are less likely to return to the community because they didn't really come to the come from the community. So that's a change that we supported. CMS will also begin publicly reporting the drug regimen review conducted with follow-up for identified issues measure beginning in calendar year 2020. That measure was adopted a few years ago. They also will update all references to the QIS ASAP system. As a reminder, CMS is in the process of migrating to a new QIS over the next few years. It will be internet-based. And so because of that and because of there may be future changes in this system, instead of referring specifically to the QIS ASAP and the CASPER, CMS will just refer to CMS-designated data submission in all of their materials just to make it less confusing. And that will take effect October 1st of this year. So there's not really a change in anything that SNFs have to do. It's just if you see any references to the CMS-designated data submission, that's what they're talking about. Now, one item that was not finalized was CMS's proposal to require expanded reporting of MDS data for all patients, regardless of payer. So in the proposed rule, CMS stated that it would be very helpful for data surveillance and quality improvement if they had information on patients for the quality reporting program from the MDS for all patients, not just Medicare patients. You know, kind of the idea of the more data, the better. They also stated that they were under the impression that it wouldn't be particularly burdensome to require expanded reporting because they were told by stakeholders that most SNFs do this anyway. They already fill out the MDS for all patients, regardless of whether they are under Medicare or not. CMS made the same proposal for the inpatient rehab facility space. However, commenters raised significant concerns with the burden associated with expanding reporting. So, in fact, it looks like that's not true, that most SNFs actually don't collect all of that information, and so requiring expanded reporting would be very difficult. It'd also be very confusing figuring out which patients are required to have this data reported, which items, whether it's all of them, how this would affect the compliance. So remember, in order to get that 2% withhold back, you have to comply with the data assessment reporting. So if you didn't for all of the patients, would that affect the withhold? Did CMS have any protections for patient privacy? Because these are not CMS's patients who are getting this data, who the providers would be reporting data on. So there are a lot of concerns about that. And also really concerns around what CMS would be doing with this data, whether they really would be using it for surveillance or if they would use it for some sort of risk adjustment, which a lot of stakeholders thought would be inappropriate or at least would need some more information. So CMS relented and said, okay, I guess we really don't have enough details to make this proposal right now, so we're going to think about it for a while. We are not requiring expanded reporting of the MDS, so just continue to report for Medicare patients only, and we'll think about all of those details and questions raised in the comments. So while this proposal wasn't finalized, CMS does intend to require expanded reporting sometime in the future, so this isn't the last we've seen of this topic. On slide 10, you can see the other major issue, which is around standardized patient assessment data elements, or SPADES. Just a quick background, because I know I've given this background several times before, but the Impact Act of 2014 requires CMS to implement standardized and interoperable quality measures, but also patient assessment data that meet the five domains that you see on the screen. Or that you see on the slide. So the idea here is that all four post-acute care settings are collecting the same patient assessment data elements so that you can kind of see patients throughout the various settings rather than unique information to the setting in which the patient is residing. In the fiscal 18 and calendar 18 proposed rules, CMS tried to adopt a couple dozen new data elements all at once. We responded with a lot of concern with that. It would have been hugely burdensome. It kind of would have been kind of flipping a switch overnight, tons and more data elements on an already lengthy patient assessment instrument. And a lot of those elements were actually not tested for feasibility or validity in all four post-acute settings. So for a lot of them, they were items that were currently used in, say, just SNFs, but now they're going to be used in IRS and LTACs, or were just previously used in home health, but now SNPs are going to have to report them as well, even though we don't know whether it's feasible to collect that data in a SNP or whether it's providing the right information. So because of that, CMS did not finalize those proposals in 2018 for the 2018 rules. Since that time, they've worked with a few contractors to conduct what they call the national beta test to actually try to test out those standardized patient assessment data elements in all four settings. So on the next slide, you can see what's actually proposed this year. CMS is kind of trying it again. Now they say, well, we have this national beta test where we actually have tried out these elements in all four settings. So we responded to one of those concerns that you had. The other is that you've had plenty of time, all providers have had plenty of time to get ready for this onslaught of new assessment elements, so you can't complain about that either. And CMS does link to the results of the national beta test as sort of, you know, citing it as evidence of the validity of these data elements throughout the final rule. So in the final rule, CMS did finalize the adoption of all of the data elements as proposed. This isn't a particularly large lift for SNPs because most of these elements are already in the MDS. However, there are concerns from the field for the adoption of these elements across all four settings because a lot of them were shown in the national beta test to just really not be relevant for other settings. They're just, patients are just different and have different needs in some of the other settings. And so you'd be asking a question, you know, are you using this service or having this treatment? And the answer would literally 100% of the time be no. And so our question continuing to CMS is whether it's really worth having all of this burden if we're really not going to get any new information out of it. So that's one issue that was finalized. The other was the adoption of the domain regarding social determinants of health. And along with this domain, CMS finalized the adoption of 7 data elements that address social determinants of health, which you can see on the slide, race, ethnicity, preferred language, interpreter services, health literacy, transportation, and social isolation. Now, in the proposed rule, CMS proposed that only race and ethnicity would be required at admission only because they kind of have the idea that your race and ethnicity won't change from admission to discharge. We argued that all of these social determinants of health are unlikely to change from admission to discharge. CMS said, well, we'll give you preferred language and interpreter services. Those are probably not going to change, but patient circumstances may change that could affect their health literacy, transportation, and social isolation between admission and discharge. We still disagree, but have kind of greater concerns around the adoption of these social determinants of health data elements. We think it's really important to collect this information, and we are hopeful that CMS has some good plans to use it, but as of now, the agency is being pretty opaque about what their plans are for this and how they plan to use some of this data for, say, adjustments in quality performance or even in payments, especially because several of these social determinants of health elements, if not all of them, are actually pretty subjective and, again, difficult to validate. So it's worrisome that the agency may plan to use this data that is not terribly reliable for purposes that involve payment or quality performance as opposed to just surveillance and making sure that patients from all walks of life are receiving the highest quality of care. But because this proposal was finalized, providers will be required to collect and report the data starting with October 1st, 2020. So for the first year, the providers will only have to report from October 1st through December 31st, and then the data will be reported for each subsequent calendar year. So every following year, the data will be for the full year rather than just the last 3 months of the year. And then finally, on slide 12, is this value-based purchasing program provisions. Really nothing of note here. The only thing is that CMS will rename the potentially preventable readmission measure. So a little bit of background on this program. CMS is required by statute to eventually transition the VBP program to using a measure of potentially preventable readmissions as soon as they can. They don't really know when that will be. Their best guess is maybe starting 2021, but they didn't mention anything about actually starting to use that measure instead of just readmissions. There's nothing new there, but there is some confusion because this potentially preventable readmission measure that the program will use in the future sounds in name a lot like another potentially preventable readmissions measure that's used in the quality reporting program. So the difference is the quality reporting program readmissions measure is readmissions after hospital discharge, as opposed to readmissions after skilled nursing facility discharge. So or within stay discharge. So it's very confusing. The names sound the same. So now CMS will just refer to the future measure that's not in use yet as the potentially preventable readmissions after hospital discharge. There's no change in the measure, just the name of it. And then CMS did publish the final performance standards for the fiscal 2022 year of the program. And so you can see that there's just a very slight change in the achievement and benchmark values between the what was estimated in the proposed rule and the final rule. You can see in some of our past regulatory advisories more details around the setup and the calculation of these scores and what they're measuring. But there were no changes to the program. I'll also just mention that CMS finalized its proposal on public displays of performance when SNFs are low volume, when they have fewer than eligible stays, either in the baseline period or in the performance period. So the gist of the finalized proposal is really just if there are fewer than 25 eligible stays, CMS will just not display a score. They'll have an asterisk saying that the volume is too low for any estimate to be statistically valid. So that's generally their approach in other programs as well. And then CMS will update the phase one review and correction deadline. So instead of using this arbitrary deadline of March 31st, they'll just use a deadline of 30 days following the issuance of the confidential feedback report just to be a little bit more consistent. So really no major changes. They are kind of nominal changes to keep an eye on, but we'll see how CMS plans in the future to transition to the potentially preventable readmission measure and continue to watch for results from the SNF BBP program as we are coming into more data as we're going into the later program years of the BBP. So with that, I can turn it back to Rochelle, and we can see if there are any questions.
Let's turn the call back to Shauna in Chicago. We're good here in D.C.
Okay, thank you. Well, on behalf of the American Hospital Association, we'd like to thank you for joining us today, and we hope that you found this helpful. We encourage you to share the summary with your senior management team to examine the impact that these payment changes may have on your organization. We appreciate all of your comments. If you have any additional comments or questions, please feel free to share those directly with Rochelle or Caitlin. And we also would like to invite you to join us again tomorrow, the 22nd, for a discussion on the IRF PPS final rule, and then again on Friday, August 23rd, for the LTAC PPS final rule. There is still time to register, and we look forward to talking with you. You can visit our post-acute care website at www.aha.org, where you'll find the links to register for the upcoming calls, as well as the recording and materials for this call and others that we have held recently. And if you have any questions, again, feel free to contact Rochelle or Caitlin directly, or you can contact me, and I'm happy to forward your request to the appropriate staff. Again, thank you all for joining us, and please enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.